Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking with a blind graduate student working on a PhD in chemistry who also has a hobby that integrates very well with his studies.
We'll talk with Hobie Wedler about both chemistry and fine wines, about how these two interests are related, and a program that he set up at a major winery in California for sighted people to experience wine tastings blindfolded. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Hobie.
You don't have to see everything around you to get the full benefit of whatever is going on around you, virtually anything.
Now, visually impaired people know that and take that for granted somewhat. We use our other senses quite a bit to supplement what we don't otherwise see. We smell, we taste, we listen to sounds that other people are hearing but may not pay attention to, and we learn to interpret these other signals from our other senses. But Hobie has really integrated this into his wine tasting, which we'll talk about later, that he runs for sighted individuals, where he blindfolds the sighted individuals.
And many blind people have learned to appreciate various facets of life that many sighted people assume couldn't be pleasurable without being able to see them. And we've had friends who've known Pete for years and years, and after a while, they'll just turn to him and say, well, why do you watch movies? How can you enjoy a movie? And he says, well, it's the same as real life. I can't see that either.
Well, as Nancy says, I can hear when I'm watching a movie if it's raining in the background. You can even hear if it's night. They often have these crickets in the background and other night sounds that, as a visually impaired person, you're just tuned into. And sometimes the sighted people watching the movies just are not. So it's not much different.
Let's start by meeting Hobie.
My name is Hobie Wedler, and I'm currently a graduate student at the University of California, Davis, studying computational organic chemistry. I'm in my third year, and I also host completely blind wine tastings with Francis Ford Coppola up at his winery in Geyserville, California, which, it, for those of you who know where Sonoma County is in the northern part of Sonoma County, about 80 miles north of San Francisco, and is a beautiful place to go enjoy a day of wine tasting or whatever you want to enjoy in the wine country. We have a restaurant, we have a great full bar and a bunch of great wines to offer. And I am totally blind myself and have been since birth.
And what was the cause of that?
It's actually microophthalmia. So it's a cop-out way of saying we don't really know. I was born with a very small left eye and a right eye that was completely non-functional. Not genetic. No one else in my family has any sort of blindness. But I saw no light at all.
So you have no functional vision, I take it?
No, none at all. Both of my eyes are prosthetic.
And you learned Braille and your mobility skills when you were young then?
Sure, yeah. In order to succeed as a blind person, my parents were, unlike, as I take it, a lot of other parents of blind children, and really pushed me and motivated me to the best, very best of their abilities to do as well as possible by encouraging me to do orientation mobility from a very young age. And they started teaching me Braille when I was 3 years old and really pushed me hard to learn and grow and succeed, much as a sighted child would. And they admit that that was hard work, because as parents of a blind child, trying to give your son or daughter the same interaction as a sighted person would, my mom says it best, you end up being like a tour guide nonstop, explaining things around, really making note of, instead of grabbing the cereal and letting your sighted child look at you grab the cereal and then grab the milk out of the refrigerator and the bowl and pour them all together, and you have to explain, I'm grabbing the cereal from the cupboard, now I'm grabbing the milk from the refrigerator and the bowl from the other cupboard, and now a spoon from the silverware drawer, come feel this, you know, that sort of thing. And it ends up taking about three times as long, and unfortunately I don't think a lot of parents do that, but the ones that do, like my parents, really helped me excel and grow as a blind person. The other thing that my parents did is they told me that anything was possible. They really let me thrive. And they said, it's your life. We're not going to control it. We're going to make sure that everyone, our blind and sighted children, are safe. But ultimately, it all comes down to what you want to do. So do what you will with it.
And now you're about to get a PhD in chemistry. When do you think that will happen?
You know, I'm currently in my third year of graduate school. I apologize. And I'm about to give my qualifying third-year seminar day after tomorrow. So it's a very stressful time with a lot going on right now, but I should have my degree within a year and a half.
And what's your ultimate goal?
You know, my goal has changed and still is evolving, but I would love to work in the wine industry as a wine educator and really pair my knowledge of chemistry with my passion for science and research science in particular, and passion and knowledge of wine to work for a winery in the wine industry as a skilled wine educator. So on top of my PhD right now, I'm working with the Wine and Spirits Educational Trust out of London, actually. They have remote programs to receive my Master of Wine, which is a certification that really explains that you understand wine. Working on that, I'm not close to receiving it yet, but it's definitely in the works. And just to keep going with that question, my other goal with my PhD is to teach. Ultimately, I want to make science or wine or whatever it is that I'm teaching less daunting and more fun and approachable. You know, I realized it's a great way to stop an unwanted conversation at a party to say I'm a PhD student in chemistry, because no one really wants to talk about chemistry. They think of that as such hard work, and it's always the class that they had at 8 a.m. and never liked. But the truth is, chemistry, and as you guys know, certainly from your physics work, science is exciting and dictates how things happen in the world. And it can be made so much fun. And I think by inspiring anyone that we talk to about it, whether they be students, people working for us, or our colleagues, we can inspire people to love science more than they did before. And that's something that's a very important goal of mine with whatever I do.
And Nancy and I can certainly vouch for the fact that science can be fun, and it really is thrilling, and there are also some very good careers to be had in science.
And one of our other volunteer activities that we've been doing for years is we go into the local elementary school and do science experiments with the fourth graders, and these kids are so excited every time we walk in. The science guys are here! And if just some of them retain that love and excitement of doing science, that'll be a wonderful thing.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is Hobie's experience as a graduate student in chemistry. And then in the final topic, we'll be talking about his wine and wine tasting experiences. So we want to talk to you today about both the chemistry and the wine interests of yours, but let's start with chemistry. And you've said you're currently a graduate student pursuing a PhD. Did you face any particular challenges due to your blindness in terms of getting admitted to this program?
Getting admitted was not the difficulty. It was really when I found my love for chemistry, when I was in high school, that I initially faced a little bit of pushback from both the administration of my high school and from my parents telling me that maybe chemistry isn't the most practical thing for you to study. I had to work with teachers and administrators to explain to them eventually that nobody can see an atom. And my chemistry teacher in high school previously had said, chemistry is a great thing. It's how the world works. It's a lot of fun. She was the one that inspired me to love chemistry, quite frankly. But then she also, to me personally, would say, this isn't a practical career because we need to use our vision so much to study chemistry. I don't think this would be right for you. So after that, I kind of didn't think chemistry would work. And then I eventually thought, nobody's looking at these atoms directly with their naked eye. They just use their vision to see what might be going on in a reaction flask. There's no reason I can't get some assistance and be just as capable of a chemist as anyone else. And when I told her this, she became a true ally and said, you're right. Maybe you should study chemistry. And I did do that. Chose UC Davis. It took me some time to convince some faculty and people working in the department that a blind person could, in fact, do chemistry. But once they understood what I could do and knew me, it was all wonderful. And that's part of the reason why I stayed at Davis as a graduate student.
Now, as a blind research physicist, you know, I clearly understand that a visually impaired person can do physics. But once you get outside your comfort zone, you think, how does someone do some other task? So I think of chemistry as being the visual parts of that, being looking at molecular structures, working in a lab with chemicals. How do you get around those obstacles?
So I'll answer your second question first about working in a lab. I am lucky enough not to have to work in a chemistry wet laboratory or an experimental laboratory where I'm mixing things all the time. I realized when I was an undergraduate student, I realized this would be very inaccessible for me to do without an assistant. So I didn't want to have an assistant working with me, looking over my shoulder 16 hours a day, however much graduate students work, which is more than 12 hours a day, I guarantee you. And I was hence considering attending graduate school in history, because history was another major of mine as an undergrad. And I got to a point where I said, you know, is there any way that I can make organic chemistry accessible to a blind person? That's like the least accessible type of chemistry there is. But because I'm here at UC Davis, we have a computational organic chemist. And I went for a meeting with him and just said, you know, is there any way that we can make computational chemistry accessible to a blind person? Could I work in your lab? And he said, well, you know, I've got confidence. Come work in my lab for a summer and we'll see what we can do. So with the help of a lot of group members, we were able to make the computational setting completely accessible to me. So I like to say the most dangerous chemical we work with is the caffeine in our coffee cups.
Graduate student certainly needs that.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And everything else is basically done on the computer. I use quantum mechanics to study what we call small organic molecules, things with about 20 non-hydrogen atoms. So using pretty high-level quantum mechanical approximations to figure out energies of different intermediates and figure out lowest energy geometries of these molecules. That's one of the biggest challenges, is looking at these molecular structures, because when we're optimizing a structure, we're moving atoms around. So if I understand the input geometry of how I entered something into the computer, because you have to understand that to create the code you need to enter it into the computer as a blind person and let the calculation begin, but what you get out might be completely different than what you entered in. So the question has always been, how do I access these output files and these output geometries completely accessibly?
And how did you solve that problem?
What we came up with was the use of a three-dimensional printer. We thought, you know, 3D printing is on the rise and it's really taking off. Can we make it accessible? It was, as I like to say, a complete shot in the dark on all of our behalf. And we got a 3D printer and started printing models that we made in-house, and it worked out well. But the printer printed in plaster of Paris powder, so it was brittle. And when I would try to dig out these models that were not space filling, so there was a lot of space between different balls and sticks, which represented atoms and bonds, so these models would often break. You know, there's a way to make 3D printing still work. That's to find a printer that we can print models in plastic. So I have a National Science Foundation pre-doctoral fellowship. And along with that, I applied for a grant that's specially offered to students with disabilities to purchase a three-dimensional printer. And they gave me the grant. And when I purchased the printer, I thought, now this is going to make chemistry accessible. And we were able to work with some collaborators in France and the Netherlands to write a script, which I'd love to tell you more about at some point, which basically takes the output Cartesian coordinates of the molecular structures that I'm studying and converts that into an STL file, which is a stereolithographic file, or an input file for the 3D printer. And we can then print out these ball and stick models, which represent very accurately molecular structure and where everything is to the nearest millimeter on the scale that we're working with. So that's plenty of accuracy for a blind person to feel a structure and know what's going on. And the coolest advancement we made is that this script that we wrote actually prints Braille on each bond on a small panel, which reads how long the bond is to the nearest hundredth of an angstrom. And what that allows us to do is pull the exact bond length from the output file that we're working with, from the chemical, what's called Gaussian output file, and present these distances in a very accessible means, so I never have to ask anyone anymore how long certain either breaking or forming bonds are.
Boy, that sounds even better than having your own personal Braille printer.
It's pretty incredible.
Now, a couple of weeks ago in show number 1423, we spoke with Tim Cordes, who's a practicing psychiatrist, but when he was a student, which was about 20 years before Hobie's a student, he didn't have access to the 3D printer, and he developed a method for making an audio representation of the molecules, and we'll have links to that show in this show's show notes.
And for writing computer programs, I assume you use a screen reader.
Yes, correct. For writing input files and for doing the little bit of programming that I do and for doing all of the chemistry I do, I use a screen reader. I use JAWS for Windows.
Now, how about your textbooks? Did you have a problem getting them put in some kind of format that you can use?
To be honest, the practicality of putting many huge, thick college textbooks into Braille in a timely manner on the quarter system was daunting, to say the least. So though I did get some books in Braille, they came in late, by and large. They're still a very useful resource material for me now. But to be honest, during my schooling, I used a combination of live readers and Learning Ally recorded textbooks. Now, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Learning Ally.
I use them in graduate school also.
They're an absolutely phenomenal resource who I've gotten to know very well, and I'm helping fundraise now through my collaboration with Coppola, mainly because of how much their services and resources helped me with understanding highly technical scientific figures. There's nothing like a really good figure description. And I honestly got very lucky when I came to Davis because there is an incredible individual here working for the Disability Center who actually got her biology degree from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and is the best in the country, in my opinion, at looking at a figure and quickly describing it using unambiguous and concise yet detailed terminology. So working with her as a live reader was an absolute blessing for me.
So you talked a little bit about some of the work that you've been doing as a chemistry graduate student. If people really wanted to learn more about your research projects, how would they do that?
I'm currently publishing my research in chemical journals as it gets completed. We have a couple of papers out in the Journal of Chemical Education, one on how we made chemistry accessible to me and how we made a computational lab accessible to the blind, and one on the science camp that I run every year through my nonprofit called Accessible Science, all about how we created and adapted several chemistry curricula to be fully accessible to the blind and how we pushed that into an entire weekend experience for blind and visually impaired high school students who want to study science and who don't want to be pushed away from their dreams of studying scientific careers. So I also have a nonprofit that people can look up called Accessible Science. That is at accessiblescience.org, all one word, lowercase. And I'd be very happy to have people go look at our website and see kind of what we're up to there. And another way to keep up to date with some of the research projects we're doing is to go to our group's research webpage, which is blueline, BLUELINE, .ucdavis.edu.
Now that's an interesting website. What does blueline mean?
Ah, so my boss, Professor Dean Tantillo, came from Boston, and all of our cluster and our server are named after subway lines in Boston.
Now for this week's final item, Hobie's experiences as a leader of wine tastings, along with a description of the so-called tasting in the dark that he runs.
So Hobie, how did you originally get interested in wine?
I became interested in wine because I was born and raised in Petaluma, California, which is in Sonoma County. And I've always had a love for things that are very local around me, but that are spread all over, that people know about wherever you go. And wine was a perfect example of that. I knew that grapes were growing in my area all around me within a 50-mile radius. Some of the finest wines in the world were being sent all around the world. And the thought that that was being produced around me was just exciting. And I never got truly into wine appreciation and fine wines until I took a very informative course in viticulture and enology here at UC Davis. Although I knew that wine was being produced around me and I liked the idea of being so close to something that was so popular around the world. But really at Davis, it was an intro to winemaking and wine sort of knowledge and wine appreciation that got me excited about pursuing my passion for wine and really tasting wine academically, remembering what I taste and writing down notes about what I taste.
How did you get involved in doing wine tastings for the winery?
So it's very interesting. Francis Ford Coppola went to Asia and did a tasting where he tasted food in the dark and left Asia saying, now this would be a really fantastic experience to offer at my winery, and I think we can do it. But if we're going to offer an experience like this at my property, we need to have a blind person running the experience.
I just assumed that you had to talk them into accepting you as a blind person running the tastings. It sounds like they initiated it.
They initiated it. It was a friend of a friend who actually did some architectural work for Francis when he was sighted, who became blind. I was a mentor to him when he was newly blind. And he told me that Francis was interested in innovating this blind wine tasting up at the property. And I thought, now this could be really interesting and fantastic. So I got a call from Francis's team a couple of weeks later saying, we would love it if you would work with us to develop and then host this experience. That was about 3.5 years ago. And I've got to tell you that my experience with the winery and their graciousness, in particular Francis's graciousness, in letting me innovate the experience, sort of design it, and then run it myself, has been nothing short of incredible for me. It's shown me that my passion for wine could really be turned into a career, and shown me how much I love putting people in a situation that they haven't been in before, i.e. being under blindfold and tasting wine for 2 hours, and showing them more than anything, being blind is not a lifelong detriment. The thing that I love about it is people leave saying, I never understood blindness until I went through this experience. It makes sense to me that life can be okay as a blind person, and they realize that you don't have to see everything around you to get the full benefit of whatever is going on around you, virtually anything. And wine is a great way to demonstrate that, because people are in a good mood when they're tasting wine. They're there because they want to be there, and it provides a relaxed, I would say disarming, and uninhibited atmosphere where people can really express their love for life. And the tastings in the dark have allowed me to do that and to really show people that you need not have eyesight to love life.
Can you describe the experience for a person coming into the tasting? What is this experience like?
At the winery, we blindfold people at the front entrance and walk them up a long flight of stairs and then down a very long wooden walkway outside through a large industrial-sounding and industrial-smelling room into the area where we do the completely blind tasting. And we seat people there and spend about 2 hours, well, an hour and a half, I should say, smelling different aroma samples, which prepare your palate to talk about wine and enjoy wine and pick out certain aromas that are found in wine in much more subtle concentrations. And then we go on to taste anywhere from 4 to 6 wines, and we discuss them. Each wine we give about 10 minutes to. So we really think about the wines and remember them they are and provide an uninhibited experience. And we show that wine is not just a beverage that you would enjoy at a party with friends, drinking and talking, not really thinking about what's in your glass, but it also can be a delightful beverage to enjoy academically, where you're thinking about it and writing down tasting notes and keeping track of how it changes over either the time period that it's in your glass or over the years that you have it in your cellar.
So I'm curious, my biggest concern about this blindfolded wine tasting is you have all of these people who are used to being able to see, all of a sudden they can't, and you're giving them glasses where the liquid is close to the top. How does that work?
First of all, I have a lot of trust in people that if I give them instructions, they'll follow them, and that has been absolutely true for the most part. So I pre-pour all the wine into, and this is how wine should be poured anyway, so it's no real accommodation. We use about 15-ounce glasses that don't have stems on them, and we pour about 3 ounces of wine in each of those glasses, so they're only a fifth full. And actually, they really have to be knocked fully on their side in order for anything to come out. So it's usually if someone feels a glass starting to tumble, they can grab it. So the level is not close to the top. And we arrange them in a very particular pattern from left to right. And we put a water glass on the far right and a cup that they can expectorate or spit into if they don't want to drink all the wine on the far left. And that works very well for a layout of the table. And if people know when they sit down that there are glasses about 8 inches off the edge of the table, they can feel for them, know where they are, and then not knock them over.
Well, gee, Pete, we went to a wine tasting a few years ago that might have gone a lot better if somebody had thought to explain to you that you had more than one glass.
Yeah, we walked in a little bit late, and I assumed there was one glass on the table, and when I found it, I thought the rest was clear. So it was like playing bowling later on.
But they were very good-natured about cleaning up the ensuing mess.
So if people want to find out more, if they're in the area, where can they go?
Definitely the best place to start is our website, www.francisfordcoppolawinery.com. That's FRANCISFORDCOPPOLAwinery.com. And it's a great winery. Again, it's a great place to vacation. That works. And people can also send me emails personally if they're interested.
So if people wanted to reach you personally, how would they do that?
Definitely the best way to reach me is by email, and I'm very responsive to email. I'd love to talk to any of your listeners, and they can reach me at Hobie Wedler, that's my name, HOBYWEDLER @gmail.com.
And what's the phone number for the winery?
You can reach them anytime at 707-857-1471. And it's a great way to reserve the Tasting in the Dark experience. We offer them about 3 times a month, and they're just a phenomenal experience. And I'd love to see both of you come up to one of them.
So give it a shot. And as usual, we'll have all of the reference and contact information you heard in the show in our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1425. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about echolocation, or flash sonar, with Daniel Kish and Jay Lauhart, who've developed a method for blind people to navigate using tongue clicks and their echoes, and their organization, World Access for the Blind, through which they train people all around the world to use this system of navigation. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success, and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.